Before we start the latest episode, I just wanted to just point out that the sound in the meeting room that we hired from the East, and I say hired, we booked for an hour and a half or something. The sound is a little bit wishy-washy, with it being a bit echoey and not built for purposes of doing a podcast. So it sounds a bit echoey at times, sounds all right in other places. I've done the best I can to try and eradicate the sound and everything on that. But anyway, here it is. Hope it's all right for you. This is the Sky is Blue podcast.
Since the last time we all got together on the Sky is Blue podcast, Chester Miller played 10 games, won 9 of them, nearly in Daryl Carpenter territory, 10 wins on the bounce.
Exactly.
But hey, Maidenhead were in there, so that's the equivalent of a win, isn't it?
Absolutely.
So there's me, Phil Tooley, Daryl, Paul Fisher and Stuart Basson, and we've got, say, 10 games to look back to. I'm sure we'll not dissect every one of them. And we'll look forward for the rest of the month with cup games and then, of course, the big game against Barnet in the National League coming up. But Stuart, this is a remarkable run that Chesterfield are on at the moment. 11 wins in the last 12 in the National League. It's a sort of run that's not been seen since the 1930s.
It certainly is that, yes, yes. I have to say I haven't particularly gone back and found its historical equivalence, because I don't want to be accused of putting a hex on it if I say we hadn't had a run like this since 30-31 or something, which springs to mind.
Yeah, 33 it season. Actually is, and we've still got a game or two to go to get into some of those territories.
Season as well, wasn't it? 32-3. So yeah, runs like this, at the risk of bringing the whole thing crashing down around our ears, tend only to end in one thing when we embark on them, and that is sitting at the top of the divisional table at the end of, well, April, this will be. Yeah.
Yeah, that's all that matters, really, yeah, isn't it?
So it is hugely significant in that respect, yeah. You know.
And Paul, going into games and just not quite expecting victory, but nearly expected victory every time, it's very different to what we've been feeling for quite a long time, isn't it?
Isn't it? It just feels like a season where things are going to progress and be quite good, don't they? They just feels that way when you've got a side, and you know, earlier in the season when the team went 1-0 down, you didn't really feel that bad, you know. So it was okay. You just felt that they were going to come back and play better in the second half, for example, which has been in the recent weeks. And you know, the goals, and I think you did some stats the other day, and you two this take about second half performances over first half, and just incredible numbers. Like, so the team seems to get fitter as the game goes. And obviously, the changes do make a difference, don't they? So, but it just seems to me like it's a side which just has just uber amount of confidence, you know, and that does breed in a sort of champion way, doesn't it? That you know, you can go a goal down. Barnet have got the same at the moment, haven't they? They've got that we'll never die type of thing. We'll leave it late and keep going and keep going. Obviously, you don't want to be always like that, but they just get that supreme bit of confidence, you know. So yeah, it just feels really good right now.
But that second half, Daz, it really, and I think it was probably shown most of all in the Boreham Wood game, which was 1-0. Bromley game, when it was 0-0 at half time, and Chesterfield went on to win 2-0. That first half, when they're playing it around, keeping possession, looking to try and find gaps. When you're defending that, you've got to be on your mettle all of the time because you don't know what's going to happen. And it is that gradual turn of the screw to wear teams down. And then in the second half, that fitness that Paul just referred to just comes to the fore, doesn't it? And once a team's got to open up because they're falling behind, well, Chesterfield have just got the ammunition then.
Yeah, they have. And it's quite interesting, sat where I'm sat, you're almost trying to train your fellow supporters not to panic.
So East End Massive.
In the first half, there's been lots of frustration in lots of games, and all I'm saying to him is just be patient, keep passing the ball. Because we get to 60 minutes at the minute, and teams are blowing. They really are blowing. And it's the constant, as you say, pulling them from side to side, runs in behind, back out again. And it's this constant shifting of a block of 11 men up and down the pitch. And we're dictating where they go all the time.
And whilst you're dictating like that, you can actually have a breather yourselves.
Correct.
Which the opposition can't.
Yeah, yeah. And we, if you almost ignore the game and watch the movement of certain players, they'll drop into areas and, as you say, have 5 minutes almost. Yes. And let somebody else take over dictating the pace, and then they'll switch around and somebody else will do it. They've got this lovely interchange of positions and fluidity within the team. And let's face it, he's making 5, 6, 3, 4, however many changes every week, and it doesn't seem to make a blind bit of difference. It's quite remarkable, and as good as I've seen in many, many years.
And that recruitment, Daz, to get the two players for every position sort of thing, is really coming to the fore now. You mentioned about those changes. Only two made for the Kidderminster game last time out. But, you know, the thing is, the players that aren't involved today know they're going to be involved tomorrow.
Yeah, exactly. And you can go from being completely out of the squad straight into the first 11.
Ollie Banks.
And it's happened quite a lot. You'll think, didn't see that one coming. And then whoever he's brought in will have a blinder. So it's, we're in a purple patch at the minute.
And it is, Paul, not just results. It is performances as well. You know, how many managers have sort of said, well, we've just been watching the champions elect. It seems to be every week, doesn't it?
Yeah, it does, doesn't it? It was no more so than Saturday as well. Interesting, Daz made a point about the team being drifting across and forward and just wearing the sides out. I don't know if nobody would have seen, or they may have been subscribing to Dorking Uncovered, but the Aldershot manager, Rhys McNally, I think he is, at, not Rhys yeah, McNally, yeah. I can't remember his name. I think he's a coach at Dorking now, and he identified that Chesterfield will be a side which drags you across from left and right in the opening games. But he said we can cope with that. So, which they may have done actually, Dorking, because Dorking do like attack like nobody's business, don't they? So,
Ross, you were nearly right. Ross McNally,
right? Yeah. Okay, yeah, he identified that straight away. Other managers, I think their players are struggling with it. I think against York, didn't they? First 20 minutes, York were all guns ablazing, we'll attack down that wing, and that Kai Kennedy was really good, wasn't on the ball. To 20 minutes, we never saw him again because he was spent, he was done. You know, so I think this football that they're playing is really good, and yeah, Chesterfield are getting the credits because of the way that they play and the way that they drag sides down and then go in for the kill that sort of later on.
And they're getting Stuart to, again, that combination of fitness and the exhaustion of the opponents, getting much more likely to have the keys to unlock the coach parking, the bus parking. Yep. Going back right to the start of the games that we didn't talk about on the last one, Ebbsfleet United, they put the shutters up at home, and then it took Chesterfield a while to get there before Dobrah unlocked. But
yeah,
the team looks the best it's been at unlocking buses when they're parked up
for than I can ever remember, actually.
It does, doesn't it? And it is all down to, as everybody else has said, dragging their players about, tiring them out. You know, not only do you become physically tired, but you become mentally tired through having to concentrate all the time to defend against it. You know, I noticed a York City player 5 minutes before half time down on his haunches, just out of breath, just frazzled by it. You know. And it happened again on Saturday, didn't it, where Kidderminster were competitive in the first half, and then gradually we got on top, we scored that goal, they suddenly had to start coming forward, gaps which we could, you know, apply a counter-attack to, you know, which is something that we don't see very often in the past from Chesterfield in the recent past anyway, you know, counter-attack.
No, I can't remember last time we scored two counter-attack goals of that nature, and what brilliant goals they both were. The first one, Jones just got the tiniest of tackles in, and then Naylor's aware, and it was 4-on-2, so he got options, but he chose the right one, and still Banks had a lot of work to do. But the second one, if you look back at that, you look at the goal and think, yeah, far post header from Grigg, but that was an absolute classic goal. That will have been a goal that will have given Paul Cook and the rest of his backroom team enormous pleasure.
Yeah, because you brought Berry on, so you got the speed on the break, you know. But Naylor, somewhere, who'd been on there 90 minutes, and got the lungs and the power from somewhere to come and overlap Berry and take
broke
the ball
to
the cross.
Right half,
and
ended up crossing left wing.
Yeah. I remember watching the thing on the telly, because officially I was in Belgium at the time.
Yes, and, you said you were,
And their left winger got the ball out just before we won it back. And I remember thinking, when their winger got the ball, well, if it ends up being 3-2, it's too late for them to, you know, because I was expecting a cross to come in and, you know, and all of that. But we won it back, stormed up the other end of the pitch and made certain of it in front of our own fans. How good is that?
And one of the things that we'll have noticed being there, that you don't always notice when you're watching on the telly, you could see that when the lad got sent off, when McNally got sent off on 81 minutes, you could just look around the Kidderminster side, who'd given absolutely everything. But at that moment, you could just see them thinking, oh, we've got to work 10% harder now. We can't. And you could almost see their resolve broken at that moment, couldn't you?
Yeah, I think you're right there as well. I mean, discussions about the actual second yellow card as well. I thought it was a little bit harsh, but at that point, you know, it didn't really matter, did it? Because Chesterfield were on top at that particular point. But yeah, he just saw them physically just go, oh no. And of course, Berry had shown a few moments before, bursting down that left hand side, that he was a one to be watched as well. So yeah, I think I'm surprised they took off the lad with the socks. What was he called? I can't remember the fullback there.
The ball guy.
Yeah,
Robinson. Yeah,
yeah. He starts off brilliantly. He was really,
and
really good
as well. They were really working out.
Yeah,
but I think that they were. Well, the lad you're talking about was on a yellow.
Robinson. Yes, that's right.
So it was before the sending off. So I think that might have been part of that they needed fresh legs, and they did. But he was their most effective player. No question about that. I was amazed when they gave the centre forward the sponsors.
I thought he was terrible. I thought he didn't get a sniff out of either of the two centre halves.
Just sort of played him really well, didn't
Tyrone Williams was the man of the match for me. Williams. Definitely. A couple of challenges that he made in the second half were just timed to absolute perfection. I don't know whether it was because he was on home territory virtually, but he was absolutely sensational. Really, really good.
Yes, and I hadn't realised until I spoke to Jamie Grimes after the match that Grimes and Williams were at Kidderminster at the same time. I knew they both played at Kidderminster, but I hadn't realised they'd been there at the same time. But going back a little bit, we talked about that Ebbsfleet one when Dobra broke it, because White and Hollis at the back that day were fantastic, weren't they? Aidan Hollis had an absolutely terrific game, and it took a little bit of Dobra magic.
The ex-Bromley goal,
yes,
was like a brick wall.
Yes,
wasn't
it was, wasn't it? Yes, yeah, absolutely.
Saved all sorts.
Yeah, no, they played really, really well. But the best thing about that at that time, Polian was the league's top scorer, and I think he touched it three times, and it was in the wrong half every time.
We
just kept him completely, and he's somebody who always seems to do well against.
He
us.
Does.
But after that Ebbsfleet one, that was where you start to think. Well, it was a clean sheet, wasn't it? That was a big deal at the time. But then we came against Halifax, 2-0 up, 2-2. None of us can actually remember the match because of other reasons.
I've seen some belters in my far too many years coming here. but he was right up there. What did they call him?
Well, I know what we called him, but his name was officially Aaron Jackson.
Oh, that's right. He was from Liverpool, by all accounts, so probably an Evertonian. But, God dear, he just got every single decision wrong all night for both sides. I mean, he was shocking in the extreme, wasn't he?
Yeah.
And sort of this, I'm in charge, this evening's all about me attitude. Yeah. Was never more typified than when he sent, was it Naylor he sent off?
Yes, it was, because he did. Yeah, I mean, Jacobs absolutely wasn't it for the time-wasting.
You just thought, what game are you watching, man, you know? And he was so pedantic with everything, wasn't he? You know, he needed you to get a slide rule out to put a free kick down and stuff, and... Yeah, how we won that game against all the odds.
One of those referees where you see loads and loads of yellow cards, but I don't recall any of them being for fouls by one player on another.
I think there was one near the end that was for a foul,
right,
and the rest others were all for Chelp or kicking the ball away or whatever.
All the others were for players' reactions to the referee and to his decisions, weren't they?
Well, as was Naylor's.
Yeah.
I mean, Cookie got sent off, didn't he? Two yellows in about 30 seconds.
Yeah.
But I think at that point, he just decided, I'll take the punishment and get sent off because he was at his wit's end.
Yeah,
I feel sorry in those instances for the fourth official, because he stood there taking the abuse, and it's his bloody mate in the middle who's acting like a pillock.
I know. You wonder sometimes if they're not stood there saying, "Well, I know, mate. What can I do?
Yeah,
I'm only the fourth official."
Yeah.
You know.
Yes.
Yeah. But no, it was. It will go down in the annals of.
Terrible.
Well, I spoke. It was quite late when I left, and I spoke to Kevin Bingham afterwards, who looks after the referees, the steward who looks after the referees. And this was a long, long time after the end of the match, and I sort of said, "Oh, have you managed to have a chat with the assessor to get what his real views are?" And if he hadn't done that, I wouldn't necessarily say why they were on here. But he said, "No, the assessor's still in with them." And that's the first time at that sort of time I could ever recall that being said. He said, "No, the assessor's still in with them."
He never had control of the game, but there was nothing to referee, was it? I mean, there weren't a dirty tackle in the match.
No.
It was played in a fairly reasonable spirit until he started to wind everybody up on both sides, including both benches.
All the talk beforehand was of the bizarre sending off of the Halifax player in the match before, wasn't it?
Yes.
Where the referee seemed to run into his outstretched arm.
Yes. That's
right. You know. Yeah. And then here we are, we had one of our own.
Yeah.
Very much so, yes, it was. And of course, from being 2-0 up a quarter of the way through the match, there's that equaliser the first goal soon after our second from Ty Williams, and penalty equaliser. Then, Paul, we got into Joe Quigley's last gasper, which at that sort of time was not unusual to score late on, but that was when sort of I had a good look back at his scoring, and every time he scored for Chesterfield, the team's won. So it's like amazing, really.
It was sort of in the last sort of 10 minutes or so that he'd done that, hadn't he? And so, it had to be Joe Quigley as well, wasn't it? So he'd done it against Dorking earlier on in the season as well, got that winner there, and I was really pleased for him as well to get that particular goal, So, and I think it was just desserts from Chesterfield's point of view. Just got 3 points,
Best side on the night. Halifax gave a good fight of it, and typical Halifax, they lose good players again, but they still keep bouncing back. And you always think, surely they can't do it again. And I'm not sure where they are in the table at the moment, they're certainly in a position that's higher than I ever thought they would be, having got rid of people like Warburton and Co. Yeah, they're six.
Gilmore and whatnot.
They're six. So
Jesse Debra,
he was a while before he signed for somebody.
Who was he going to?
Was it maybe Barnsley? Was it possibly? I can't remember. Anyway,
he failed a fitness test.
Yeah, he did somewhere, didn't he? But he has gone somewhere. I'll check where he is. But after the Halifax match, great following Daz at at Rochdale.
Yeah.
And an unusual all done and dusted by half time, no goals in the second half. That's that was a good solid away. That was a proper away performance, wasn't it?
Well, we set off full of intent, in charge of the match, on the front foot. No surprise when we scored. In fact, we could have scored before that. We then sort of took the foot off the gas for a minute or two, and we'd had a couple of little warnings about this. If they gave the young lad, the centre half, a bit too much time on the ball, he could pick a pass. And we still, even though we'd kind of set up to negate that, left a huge hole and didn't press, and tried to hold the high line, which, as you know, is fatal anyway. If you're not pressing the ball, you can't hold the high line. And got caught. And you know, I've never seen Cairo Mitchell finish that, but there we go. but again, immediately, it was like, OK, right, we'll step it up again, get back in front, and then, for all their huffing and puffing in the second half, I just couldn't see us not winning the game. Mm. I really couldn't. I mean, the defence were rock solid. Goalkeeper came and did everything he had to do. Really competent. We just looked professional and in charge and, you know, without trying to sound arrogant, a cut above them.
Mm.
And their manager said as much, I think, even though he was trying to obviously bull up his own team's efforts on the night. But it was never a game where you thought after we'd gone back in front again that it was going to get anything other than our win. And I think that will have sent a bit of a message. It was a Tuesday night game on whatever it's called now, TNT, wasn't it? It was live on national telly.
Okay, I forgot that was a telly.
And quite a few, I'm sure quite a few National League teams, managers and stuff were watching that and thinking, oh, God, yeah, get ready for that. Because we were just in control. That entire second half, we were in control. And I never thought we would do anything other than win the game once we'd gone back in front. Totally professional.
Yeah, Dobber and Naylor there, and let's just take a time out for Naylor, Daz, because again, I think on here, on the pre-season, what I said, I think he'll turn out to be the best signing in the National League for any club this season. Mm. I've not seen anything that's made me change my mind yet.
No. I thought he's grown into the season as well for me, to the point now whereby he's 8 and 9s out of 10 every single game.
Mm.
He breaks things up. He plays a simple pass. He's got a hell of an engine on him, box to box. And on set pieces, I mean, good grief, he's deadly. He attacks the ball. He doesn't just wait for it to come to him. He actually attacks headers and stuff. He could have had another one on Saturday, actually. It's just flew wide, didn't it, when we'd gone 2-1? And
Mike Jones could have had one on Saturday. he had another charge down, didn't he, from the defence? And he was just holding his head for about 5 minutes afterwards, thinking, "Oh, come on, how did that not go in?"
Yeah. But no, he's a thoroughbred. Yes. Would be my description. Way above this level. However old he is, he's way above this level.
Mm.
And when you've got him and Jones, or him and whoever in the side, that's why I think we were all a bit wondering whether Paul Cook might rest him last Saturday in case he missed Barnett. Thankfully he didn't.
Again, the responsibility. And in the pre-match interview, Danny Webber sort of said, well, you know, you've got to give him responsibility, and they all took it, didn't they? Three men on four cards.
And
the rationale was, if you're just not quite sure what we're talking about, if they'd got another book in, they'd have missed the Barnett game, not the Portsmouth game, because the FA Cup got its own disciplinary thing apart from red cards, which is slightly different. But Naylor says 7 goals in League and Cup, 3 assists, and another player of that ilk, Paul, coming into bloom now after no pre-season, Michael Jacobs.
Oh, definitely, yes. They were waiting a while for him. He was the one who was sort of coming on as substitute, wasn't he, to start the season, drip feeding him into the side, and then he got a starting role, and all of a sudden, and I think it was the Ebbsfleet game, ironically, it was the Ebbsfleet game that he got sent off in,
yes,
that I thought he was having his best game.
It was terrific,
so,
wasn't it?
Yeah.
But he should be an, he should be an instant hero because he scored a goal in a point we got at Maidenhead.
Yeah, well, exactly, yes.
There's not many of them. Indeed,
no, and what a goal it was too, as well, wasn't it? Mm. Like, nice little curling effort into the top corner. But yeah, he slots into that side really nicely as an attacking three. He's been playing out on the right. I think I interviewed him before, he preferred to be on the left-hand side, but of course there's traffic there, isn't there? So so good luck with that. But you know, he could slot in the number 10. But some of his little intricate moves, you've noticed his little slide rule balls that he passes through. There was a moment on Saturday when Naylor had made a run forward, but Ollie Banks hadn't picked his head up to have a look, and a couple of times there as to turn my phone off. So a couple of times when they hadn't looked up, and Naylor had gone into the penalty area, and all he needed was a little bit, you know, a ball through the middle, but it didn't quite pan out. And I think that's something they're probably going to be working on. But Michael Jacobs is excellent at that, and there's so much competition for places in those three, attacking three. No, they'll never stop running or making moves or pushing out into little spaces. And yeah, it's something for the other defences to be worried about, isn't it? But yeah, Jacob's excellent.
And throwing forward to the next match, we'll look at some of the past ones again in a bit, Stuart, with your interest in Portsmouth as well. You've got Jacobs and Naylor as well as Gary Roberts on the backroom staff. Indeed. And Paul Cook, of course. But Portsmouth won't have players on their books right now at the top of League One unbeaten all season that you wouldn't think that Naylor and Jacobs could nip into their side and play in their first 11.
Well, one of them came out of their team last season, didn't he? Straight to us. So you know, and I think there was some talk about whether he'd get an offer from them or not among the fans. You know, some thought it worth it. So to say that we've got two players of that quality, yeah, I'm sure they would embellish any side in the leagues one and two, really, you know, the way they're playing, both of them.
And as Paul was just alluding to as well, that front attacking three, well, all of a sudden, last few games, we've got Banks in there rather than being old in midfield.
But, yeah.
And he's like a new signing, isn't he?
Oh, it, just to give him that encouragement, you know, to go forward and play his football, you know, and to say to him, let someone else worry about the defending, perhaps, you know. Although, of course, they all defend all over the pitch, you know, and it starts up front, doesn't it? But yeah, it is like going out and signing a different player just by, well, as indeed is Mandeville, for instance, who was in that position and has now been asked to work out of right back more often. You know, to have players who have the ability to do that kind of thing, who are versatile enough like that, you know, because you get players that are versatile and they call them utility players, don't they? But that's always a bit of a sort of a demeaning tag, really. You know, you call a player a utility player if you can't quite make up your mind whether he's any good at anything sometimes, you know. But Banks, as you say, has come into that position. And he looks like a different player, and the whole kind of way we attack functions slightly differently with him there as well, doesn't it? You know, Will Griggers, as you were saying before we went on air, has suddenly got someone who knows where he's going to be, you know, and who can pick him out, you know, and that's the same for all the players that he attacks with, and he joins in all the little short passing stuff with Mandeville and whoever happens to come up to support on that side, and he can look up and ping a ball across the field towards Horton or Freckleton or whoever's running up from the left, you know.
And it's the one guy that, well, I can't really remember this because it's talking about when Paul Cook's on the touchline and I can't really actually remember the last time he was. But, you know, he often goes a bit scranny when people take long shots, but he doesn't when Banksy has a go, does he?
No. I've watched Cookie, especially when Banksy has taken some long shots that have ended up in sort of C14 or whatever, rather than the back of the net. And he does turn to the crowd with his hands above his head and claps him, you know? I don't think he minds Ollie Banks doing that at all, because he knows what he can do, you know, when it comes right, and he knows that it comes right as often as it doesn't, you know?
Now, one of the things we've been talking about, individuals, they're outstanding individuals, and we could talk about individuals as long as we are, but I just noticed after the match at Kidderminster, Paul, that 17 games in the National League this season, and on 1866 Sport, my co-commentator always names a man of the match. And in 17 National League games, he's been 13 different man of the match.
Really?
Doesn't that just say everything?
Yeah, doesn't it just? Yeah, I mean, it's a team game, obviously, and there's not one person standing out. Wilgrave's got 9 goals. All of a sudden, he's got 9 goals from somewhere, hasn't he, when he was struggling at the start of the season. Tom Naylor, 7 goals. I think that's the most he's got in his career, I think, around that point.
In terms of all goals, he'll equal his best ever tally, and he's got 31 games left, minimum of 31 games left to do it.
Incredible.
He's got a couple of cup goals for Pompey. So he's got so far 7 goals, 6 in the league and 1 in the cup. And his best haul in all competitions is 8.
Right. So getting to
so
good
he's
areas.
He's equal his best league tally, but he got a couple of cup goals for Pompey in
right.
one season.
So he's on course, isn't he, then, to best his goal scoring record.
But out of those 13 different man, none of them have been goalkeepers yet, which you'd normally expect a goalkeeper to be a man of the match by now, wouldn't you? So that's 13 different outfield players, and the people that haven't won a man of the match yet include Jamie Grimes.
Catching reliable.
Yes, absolutely right. Who's been probably number 2 on an awful lot of games. Then the others are ones who played less: James Berry, Ash Palmer, and DJ. So they've not had one yet. But it is that strength in depth that there is a player who can come in and take your place and keep your shirt.
Yeah, going back to the goalkeepers as well. I mean, their goal on Saturday was the first time in over 7 hours. They just sort of conceded the goal in all comps, and we sort of glossed over that little bit, So it's because we've been conceding so many goals at the start of the season. All of a sudden, they've tightened things up a little bit, haven't they?
Well,
so,
carrying on scoring.
With carrying on scoring, yeah. So it's not gone the other way, had it? So disappointed to concede from a set piece as well.
Very.
So because it was second phase as well, wasn't it? It was a nod back. It was like the olden days, wasn't it? That type of goal, wasn't it? Just hoist into the box, second ball across, not in, goal. As simple as that, wasn't it? So, you must get a little bit frustrated about that. I'm sure Danny Webb was. But then again, all the management were frustrated after the first half performance, weren't they? Mm. So
very much so. But they'd got some inches in the side, Kidderminster, haven't they? They've got plenty of height for set plays. And almost when they're doing the handshake at the beginning, you think they're gonna be really concentrated on set plays. You just could see that. Yeah. A, where they are in the league. B, looking at their players.
Yeah, and I think if you looked at their record last year in the National League North, they scored a lot of goals from set pieces. They weren't prolific, but a lot of the goals they got were from set
pieces. And they only nipped into the playoffs at the very, very, very last minute. They won their last 6 regulation fixtures.
That's right, they found form and managed to...
And then three to win 3 games to go on.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Which they, all credit to them. I thought they put in a sterling show, but class total in the end again Saturday.
Best player, of course, on the
day. Yes.
Yeah. Oh, yes.
We didn't allow him to play against us.
Bailey Hobson, yes, of course. Who was getting rave reviews. Has been getting rave reviews. I'm not picked up quite so much about Bailey Clements at Eastleigh. Ditto. I said, well, ditto, yeah.
Yeah. 4 matches out of 6 appearances.
Good
Lord. Well,
wow.
Accounts.
Wow. Yeah.
4?
Yeah.
Wow.
He'd be in the lead on the 1860s. He'll be asking, can we transfer them? Are they transferable? Yeah, and talking of left backs, Horton was ridiculously unlucky to not play at Kidderminster, Daz, because the last couple of games he's all of a sudden become a new player. But then Freckleton comes in, has a real shaky start, but then vital to that second goal that Chesterfield got the noses in front.
Yeah, and Freckleton, you can excuse him a bit of rust because he's not played for a few weeks, has he? But this is the thing again, Horton has 2 blinding back-to-back performances. He's out of the 16. He's not even, he's just sat in the stand.
Yeah.
And you think, how the hell? But
yeah. And you still go away with 3-1.
Yeah, and the players, but the players will know, it's my turn for a rest or whatever. Or if Cookie says, I'm not in today, I'm not in today. And they don't seem to be, egos flying. It's always easier when you're winning games, I know. But, they know if they keep patient and keep turning it in training and so on, they'll get the chance.
Right, okay, let's talk about keep on doing it, keep on getting training and getting your chance. I'm going to say one thing to you, Paul. Jeff King.
Yes, well, can't get in the side. can't get into the team. You know, even Raheem Shackelford's slightly ahead of him in the pecking order, as they say.
And the bizarre thing is, the right back, we played 17 games in the National League. Jeff King started 6, Raheem started 4. So our right backs only started 10 out of 17 because of Mandeville.
Yeah. Who can slot in at right back? Yeah, if you're keeping Jeff King out of the side, they must be doing particularly well. So, sadly for Jeff Long, they may not continue, really. But absolutely, I think it's quite strange, isn't it, not to have Jeff King in the side, having been such a regular player over the last couple of seasons. He's got work to do, hasn't he, to get into the starting 11. So I know he's under his last year of his contract. So wait and see on what's going to happen there, I think. So Shackelford's the same. He's in the last... Again, he's had lots of injury issues, hasn't he, Shackelford, to be fair. So those two are vying for the place in the cup side, aren't they? So, or is it going to be a different cup side that turns out this Sunday rather than the one that turned out against Kettering, or the one in the FA Trophy that's going to turn out in December? So,
I think you can say that the the FA Trophy team will be vastly different to any other side we've seen all season.
I think there's a Ford Fiesta just driving through there. I think I've just seen Paul Cook stopping it and asking the passenger if he wanted to play in the FA Trophy. I'm sure I just saw
I think
that.
That's about right, yeah.
Then, yeah, after that, we briefly talked about the Maidenhead game. We don't really talk about that much because that's the blot in the with the draw.
Yeah,
then the two 2-0 wins against the belligerent Bees, Bromley and Borehamwood. Hmm. To me, Stu, that was the start of the turning point where you think, yeah, we're a good side with some ricks and some frailties, into being... we are the side.
Yes, yeah, certainly. The Bromley game especially, because they were on good form when they came up here, weren't they? You know, people were saying they'll give us a test and all of that, as indeed people say about the teams we've got to face, that they're on good form, or perhaps they're only on good form because they haven't played us yet, you know? The Bromley game, 2-0, was it? As I remember it, a reasonably straightforward go out, play them off and win it kind of performance again.
It
you
was
know?
Far, far, far too straightforward for what you would have expected.
Yeah, yeah.
With the form and the past.
Yeah.
Unbelievable. I that was the day I thought, this is it.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah.
We are it.
Mm. Yeah, yeah.
Town are the team.
And you're still not kind of arrogantly expecting it every week, but you are now more confident that we can go out and do it. Mm. Yeah. Yeah, and Borehamwood, I suppose, have been a bit of a shadow of their recent teams, haven't they, in terms of their performances this season. But still, you have to go there and you have to play them and you have to beat them at their own place.
Well, you've got to beat Nathan Ashmore
for
Borehamwood. You've got to beat Michael Cheek for Bromley, Ball.
Yeah.
And you've done it, yeah. So it's not easy, is it, as well? But yeah, that going to that Borehamwood, Bromley looked... okay in patches, but it was they didn't put in a performance that night. You know, they just didn't. But they are a better side than that. I think you know that. You know that they showed that, and they've been showing that with their recent run. Absolutely, yeah. So, but the result against Borehamwood, to me, was Chesterfield taking advantage of a side that was old, that had been sort of cobbled together. They got rid of a few players at the back end of last season, but majority of the squad had been there and done that. But I think it was the end of its line. Mm-hmm. And because they never troubled Chesterfield at all.
Not in the slightest.
No, and it was the poorest Borehamwood performance that I've seen against Chesterfield since they'd ever played them. It was good from a Chesterfield point of view, but a disappointing one from them. They look weak, they look poor. In fact, it could have been more than 2-0 if it wasn't for Ashmore.
Yeah.
So, you know, I mean...
By the way, Bromley, the defeat at Chesterfield, only defeat in 16 now. So, you know...
It shows, doesn't it, that they just had a bad night. They are a good team, and Chesterfield... I mean, I think Andy Woodman referenced that. You know, we'll play them later on in the season. So... and that's when their cookie will crumble. So, but by that point, Chesterfield might be out of sight. By that point, the way it's going, so it doesn't really matter what happens. And I quite like Andy Woodman, actual fact. So, I think he's got sad playing really, really well.
But definitely with Boreham Wood, I think they've signed a few players who, you know, could play football like Tom Whelan, but it doesn't suit them, does it? They're trying to play a little bit better football. Mm-hmm.
Well, they brought Balanta in, who's a good footballer, but he's 36 now, or something like that.
Yeah.
And he is a good footballer at that level, and he's a number 10, but that's where Tom Whelan can play, you know, so there's kind of mix and matching between him. There's absolutely no way Tom Whelan would get in that starting 11 for Chesterfield.
I don't think he wouldn't get on the bench. He might not get in the FA Trophy team.
Well, yeah.
Bit of a breather then for the cup, Kettering.
Yes.
Yeah. Not a bad afternoon.
No, it was a nice day out for Kettering.
Kettering.
We were very professional, weren't we, again? You know, ran them into the ground in the last half hour. They were on fumes, basically, and they scored four, and that was it.
And I think I put out at the time, I'm sure I've got this right, I think 3 out of the 5 biggest FA Cup wins in the last 100 years have been under Paul Cook. Braintree, Hartlepool, and that. Yeah, you know, it's not coincidence, is it, Stu?
No. Well, they're just doing the cup, what they do in the league, don't they? And just play teams out and then go and beat them. People say we're a second half team, or we only play for half. People say we've got to play for both halves. Well, we do play for both halves. We play for the first half in order to kind of win the opportunity to go out and win in the second half, don't we?
If they think they've played a half time.
Absolutely.
Kettering was good, you know. More debuts, wasn't it? Ryan Boots' debut.
Yeah.
It did pretty well, I thought, you know, and has done ever since. You don't notice that the goalkeeper has changed, which I think is probably the best compliment you can pay to both of them, you know.
Let's forget Portsmouth, because that's a cup game. For Barnet game, where it's the most important of the next two games, the most important, I know Paul Cook says there's only 3 points available in every match, but which keeper would you start for that? I'm going to ask
Boots,
you
the man with the shirt, isn't he? You know, I suppose... Which keeper would I start? Well, I'd probably keep Boot for Pompey and Barnet. But if Tyra starts Pompey, he'll start Barnet, I think.
All right, Paul.
Yeah, well, I would... turn me mic on, that's a good idea. I would start with Tyra. So I think he's done enough, you know, so with his back spasm, he should be back in now. And I don't know how much Everton will be monitoring his progress and whatnot, so but he should be... Should be back in. Tyra for Portsmouth. Now, Barnet, I don't know. Depends how he does. So, Tyra for Portsmouth for me.
Yeah, but the question I was asked was Barnet, so I'm going to pass on. Yeah.
Tyra for both, then.
Tyra for both. All right, okay. There's two Tyras there.
Mate, that's three.
Well, all right, there you go.
Yeah, definitely. Head and shoulders, better goalkeeper. Better with his feet, better with his hands. More agile. He gave me the willies. He was a bit Covellan-esque again on Saturday. Was Boot.
There was one.
There's no comparison to me.
But his catching's been terrific. The thing is, he hasn't been tested. He's not had any shots to save, has he? In three games.
Who's he played against? Exactly.
So all three of you are the basis of we've seen Tyra's made some terrific saves. We've not actually seen Boot do anything.
No, in fairness to Ryan, I'm not saying he's a bad goalkeeper. You don't play in the National League at the level he has for as long as he has if you're a bad goalkeeper. But if you're asking me who's the better goalkeeper, short and long term, it's Harry Tyra.
Yeah, okay, interesting. Anyway, we'll take a very short break now and we'll be back to look forwards a little bit. We're back. Phil Tooley, Daryl Carpenter, Paul Fisher and Stuart Basson, of course, for our second little bit of the Sky is Blue podcast. We've been looking back. We're going to look a little bit forward now. Portsmouth, twice FA Cup winners, Stuart Basson. Mm-hmm. 5 times finalist. Mm-hmm. Not very long ago, I can't quite remember exactly when, in the Premier League. You're 20,000 crowds for their home games. For the first round, that's as real a deal as you can get, isn't it?
The realness of the deal is first in non-league structure versus first in in football league structure playing each other, isn't it? You know, top of League One against top of the National League.
With one defeat between them, if you if you assume that Portsmouth's defeat in the League Cup was after a draw on penalties.
So. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it is the one game that you wanted, really. Mm. I think every town fan, well, I mean, some town fans will want run to the final, won't they? But every kind of realistic
to be
town
fair,
fan,
I want to crave on the paper mills. But,
well, yeah. But you want your team to qualify for this stage of the competition, yes. And then I think if you've got aspirations towards having to win one promotion place, you know, you're going to say, let's qualify for this stage of the competition, let's have the best side we can play, make a few bob, and if we go out, we go out. Mm. You know, and then we can look at the league, you know. And that's course, the opportunity we've got before us. Not an opportunity to go out, but, you know.
If Town do go out, the Telefund, decent crowd for this match, decent crowd for the Kettering match, prize money for beating Kettering. It's thick end of 100 grand for a couple of games, isn't it?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So you have to make the effort, you know, to get that far, you know, perhaps we get the third round again, I don't know, and make a few more. Makes some more money, but it's just the right game at the right time as well, I think, for us.
I think it's a perfect game on so many levels.
Yeah.
You know, from a crowd point of view, it was always going to be a telly match.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you look at some of the ones last season, you think, oh, that should have been on telly, But you look at others and you think, no, these other ones that have got a better call. But there was none that had a better call on this one, were there?
The only thing that disappoints me slightly is the kick-off time. If you get the first train out of Portsmouth Harbour on a Sunday morning, the train that you catch at St Pancras will get you into Chesterfield 2 minutes after the kick-off.
Right.
So, so no one can get up on the train. I've got a friend that I've known from supporting Portsmouth. He has for 40-odd years, and we were at college together, and he's having to come up the night before, you know. So we'll have to go out for a curry or something, unfortunately.
Well, there might be a few Pompey fans out on Saturday night down the town.
There might be,
So there you go. But yeah, they're having a phenomenal season, Paul, aren't they? But yeah, we were saying before we went on air, you look down their squad list, and John Massino, who is only 37 years old, he was player coach at Oxford, went to Pompey just after their third round defeat at Spurs to Harry Kane last season. 42 matches he's been in charge, 4 defeats. This guy's clearly got something about him, because you look down their squad list and they're all players that we know because they've been playing Chesterfield over the years. There's no superstars in there. He's just got something, hasn't he?
Yeah, Matt Senior was a Graham Wesley advocate, wasn't he? He was a man who played
in the bodybuilding 11 at Stevenage. But he'd been at Brentford. He had a good career at Brentford before he went to Stevenage.
That's true. That's one. Then he got bigger, didn't he, at Stevenage. Of course, they had a success over Newcastle, didn't they, in the Cup some years ago? Or they certainly took him to a replay, didn't they? Many years ago, I think it was. But yeah, it's a sort of worst best draw that you could get. You know, you get the seeded number one side in the cup. You can't get any higher than Portsmouth being top of League One, and you know, and Chesterfield being top of League Two, top of League One. Well, one day, top of the National League. Yeah, it's really got you enticed, and see how can Chesterfield really get, you know, take the best side in League One? Can he take them as far as they can? You know, they've shown last season that they can beat League Two sides. That's not a problem. But it's the next step up from that. Have they got the quality in that side to test themselves against the best in League One?
Well, they tested themselves against West Brom.
Well, they did. Yeah. Absolutely. And they were, seconds away from doing it. So, home tie, of course. So, didn't turn up for the second game, which was a largely big disappointment, wasn't it?
So but you get that when there's such a gap between
absolutely
teams, don't
you? You never get second chances.
That's why two legs in the League Cup back in the day, you doesn't matter what you do at Liverpool, you're going to lose.
So, Mancini, obviously, he's raw in his sort of managerial skills, doesn't know about defeats, does he? No. Doesn't know about losses. So let's hope he gets one on Sunday.
But you look at their squad, and I know we're out of touch with League One. We've not played there for a while, so you do get out of touch. But looking at their players, you know, and be honest, looking at their players who have played more than 10 games, started more than 10 games this season. Did we know Colby Bishop, their leading scorer? No. Did we know Abu Kamara, another striker? No. Do we know Joe Morel in midfield? No. Will Norris, the goalkeeper? Not really. Marlon Pack? Yeah, I know him. Yeah, I remember him from Cheltenham. Yeah, I remember him. Regan Poole, Joe Rafferty? Yeah, I remember him from Rochdale. And then you look down, Connor Shaughnessy? Oh, yeah, that's a name that rings a bell. But there's no household names in there, Daz, are there? And there shouldn't be any players in there that you think, well, are better than Tom Naylor or Mike Jones or Liam Mandeville or Armando Dobra, etc., etc. You know, it should be a close contest looking at the players.
Yes. I think it kind of depends which 11s each manager picks, if I'm being honest.
I think we probably would like the 40 grand prize money a bit more than Pompey.
I suspect we will go very strong. Very strong. Whether they'll be quite as keen to go with that.
Yeah. Well, they've got the big. We've got a big holy grail to get back into the EFL,
yeah.
But their holy grail is to get back to where they belong, in the equivalent that we belong. Yeah. They belong in the Championship.
Exactly. Whereas ours is probably worth £1 million extra to us, theirs is probably worth £5 million extra.
At least, yeah.
So, you know, putting money aside, they are at least, aren't they, at least a Championship club.
Mm.
Just in the same way we like to think we're a League One.
Well, I remember my first ever long distance away match was at Portsmouth in 1976 when they'd come down. Ian St John was the manager. They got Chris Lawler, ex-Liverpool. Yeah, yeah. And it was like, wow, we're playing Portsmouth.
Yeah, massive.
Like, wow, great. 1-0, Rodney Fern.
Yeah, Jimmy Dickinson and all that. Yeah. You know, history. And a traditional proper football club. And it'll be nice. I hope they do bring a few, accepting what Stu says about the Sunday lunchtime kickoff and stuff.
We can't monitor how many they're selling because they physically printed all their tickets. They are selling physical tickets.
Right,
it's not an e-ticket job. They've physically printed them off.
So. I mean, we've got a situation though where we're getting an extra £50,000 each team for being on the telly.
Yeah.
So if you know, provided you don't lose more than £50,000 in ticket sales, you're actually better off, aren't you? Whenever they put it on, and from a national perspective, again, you know, to show the top of the National League, hopefully holding their own or at least being competitive against, you know, the team considered to be favourites to go up at a League One on the run they're on, you know, it's good endorsement for the club in lots of ways. It's good advertising. So let's just hope it's a cracking game. Whatever the result is, you know, it's competitive, and we can all leave with fit players and ready to face Barnet the following week, whether we're in the hat or not.
And of course, some people will be saying about fixture pile-ups and everything. Well, of course, you know, if we do get through to the second round, I think is it still a blank Saturday or I think we've still got a blank Saturday, haven't we?
No, it's home against Altrincham.
Oh, it's home against Altrincham. Thank you, Paul. So, but in the previous match against Kettering Town, and it'll be the same. You know, the FA Cup, since Manchester United decided they didn't want to play in it all those years ago, has gone down the nick. But the crowds that week, the Kettering crowd was stupid, wasn't it? Stupid for a good stupid.
Yeah.
I mean, I didn't check the others, to be honest, but I would hazard a guess that was the biggest on the day by a considerable margin.
I'm sure it was.
I would think so. Yeah. So
it was about fourth or fifth biggest home FA Cup crowd as well. Fifth biggest
ever since we've been here.
Since we've been here.
No, I think the comparison somebody said about when we played Wrexham here in the first.
Oh, it was 3,000. It was awful.
Would it have been, because it was the fourth qualifying round? Would that have been then the biggest qualifying attendance?
Oh, it'll be in our biggest qualifying attendance here. It isn't the biggest qualifying attendance ever, I look back years ago and we beat that when you play people like
Burton Swifts or something like that.
Works got more than that at home class in 20.
No, it's not our biggest ever qualifying crowd.
Right, okay.
It's just that we've not been in the qualifying apart from the last 5 years for a long while. It's the biggest in modern times, but modern times is only 5 years. In essence, and back in the day, back in the 20s, of course, the rounds were different.
Yes.
The first round was in essence what's now the third.
Yeah.
So, you know, round one and two were qualifying rounds, and anyway, it's different. But no. But I think that our first 11, and nobody knows what that is because we've all got our own individual views, but I think our first 11 will be closer to our first 11 on Saturday than Portsmouth will be. That's my prediction.
But when we have the fundraising and introduction for the training ground thing across the road a couple of weeks ago, I was talking to Paul Cook, and he said to me, you know, we're not bothered about the FA Trophy, so expect whatever side you like.
Yes.
He said, but we'll go strong in the FA Cup. He said, I want us to win and get through and make some money. Because he said, if we do that, it helps everybody.
Of course it does. Absolutely.
And, you know. And so again, looking back to, is it the perfect draw or the worst draw you could possibly have had?
Yes.
It's the perfect draw. Now it's on telly because get the gate money, we get the telly money, irrespective of the result. Yes. And if we do go through, it's a bonus.
Yes. No, that's right. And you'd almost want to go through on Saturday, then have a easy, if there is such a thing, draw for the next round to go into the hat for the third. Mm. Because... Yeah, but then what you don't want is to draw Plymouth away or somebody like that, you know. But there's always a shout for the third, the third, and first round win prize money is 40,000. It's going to be 60,000 for the second round. Yeah. So you've got another 100,000 on top of the 100,000 that's already in the pot. So you've then made a massive difference, made a big cut into last year's £1 million loss. Yeah. Sort of thing. So it is absolutely right.
You know, we hold up like we do every year. If we can get to the third round and get a good home draw, and it's live on telly, then you're talking big money. You're not talking 50-60 grand.
You're probably talking you're away at Chelsea's equivalent or something.
You know,
like
a Liverpool or a Newcastle or a Tottenham or whatever. You know, it will make a huge difference.
Because the players who played at Chelsea still talk fondly about that. They don't say it was a 5-1 defeat. They talk about playing a great team at Chelsea in front of 6,000 away fans.
Yeah, the European champions.
Absolutely right. You know, and scoring a goal against the European champions. That's what they talk about. They don't. Yeah. The fact that it's 5-1 defeat is irrelevant.
Playing against Lukaku and players of that ilk. Yeah. You know, I mean, top internationals.
Well.
Now.
None of our Belgian spy-eyes are listening to that. So, and then, of course... Yeah, if that's not a big enough game against Portsmouth, Paul, the next league game, National League game, Barnet.
Yeah, that's going to be a toughie. Dean Brennan's built up a really, really good side there, hasn't he? And even though I know he hasn't played against us too many times, but all of a sudden you find Nicky Cabamba is being your nemesis, isn't it? So in bagging a hat trick the other week.
And he's fit again. If people have seen that he got that injury, groin injury, two matches ago, he played on Saturday. So he's back in the fray.
Of course, they've signed Gary Hooper as well.
Who's not started yet?
He's not started yet. Yeah, he's building up his fitness. I mean, that's
scored. Yes, he did.
Yeah, I mean, that is a real signing. That is, he's at 36 years old. I'm pretty certain he'll still do a job at National League level. He just knows where the back of the net is, doesn't it? So, but been a while out of the country, of course, playing in India and Australia and New Zealand.
Yeah, the only
whatnot.
Issue with him will be whether he's got that fitness level against the way that Chester will play at this stage. He'll get there.
Yeah.
Whether he's there now, none of us know, do we?
Exactly, yeah. We'll find out in due course, won't we, whether it's going to be 20 minutes or 45 for him. But, they just built up a side. Dean Brennan, of course, former Wealdstone manager, took that job at Barnet, the local rivals, and now he's taking them. And it's ironic that the two sides that got relegated back in 2018 are the two sides battling it out to try and get back in the Football League, isn't it? So.
And their two defeats this season have been away at Daggers, at the end of August, and away at Rochdale 4-2 back in the middle of September time. So they've not lost since the middle of September. Oxford City won 2-1 away last week. They drew with that secondly, third, as it was at the time, with Solihull the week before that, scored late to equalise there, didn't they? Then that come from behind win, late win against Maidenhead the week before, 3-2. They won 3-2 at Dorking, 2-1 against Fylde, 2-1 against Kidderminster, 4-2 at York, 0-0 with Halifax, 2-1 against Aldershot. So they're not putting teams to the sword, Paul.
No, it's just a different kind of second place in the Chesterfields. They've had to scrap and battle and work their way. You know, they're not beating York's 4-0, are they? So they're not feeling a little bit more comfortable when they've got the third goal against Kidderminster, for example. You know, so
their last three goal winning margin was 9th of September against Altrincham, who of course have been on a terrific run since then.
They have, yeah, indeed. So any side can beat any side on this day, but the best sides always put their rivals to the sword, don't they? So, and I know you looked at sort of Notts County beating Wrexham earlier on in the campaign last season, but Wrexham somehow found a way to beat Notts County, and will be with a penalty save, granted, back end, but the best team in the end wins, don't they, towards. So if Chesterfield lose to Barnet, it's not a reflection on how the season will be, and I hope people just all of a sudden don't start jumping off cliffs, you know, so if they lose to Barnet, for example. But it'll be a two clash of styles, I think, and I'm really looking forward to it, but I'm not there. I'm at Vicarage Road. So, but yes, I'm looking forward to it.
See, you might have two before then. Would you take a draw right now against Barnet, Stu?
On condition that I can have a draw at their place, yes.
Oh, okay. That's, you know? That's a nice little addendum.
That keeps them at arm's length, then, doesn't it?
And you're looking at their side. They've got Kabama, who we've mentioned, but of course Chesterfield's very own Zach Brunt has really added to their midfield this season, Paul, hasn't he? He's a class act.
He is, and we've seen that before. And he's been building up his sort of career, hasn't he? At Boreham Wood, they were really sad that he left him, and is it George Broadbent who went to Doncaster for a little bit of money from Sheffield United?
Well, didn't he?
Southend, he was there for a little while.
Well, he got the erroneous sending off, didn't he?
Yeah, with Calvin Miller, didn't he? He's a good player. You know, he's a good player, and
they've just signed Jordan Cropper again.
Another Chesterfield. A long throw shows what their sort of targets will be, but.
Yeah. But I can't see him starting. They played Curzon Ashton in the cup, so he'll probably play in that. But you know, he hasn't played at all yet, Cropper, for them. So I can't see them, unless it's an injury issue, bringing him straight in for his first league game. But yeah, you look down there. They've got Sam Barrett, who's never quite replicated what he did at Maidenhead a few years ago, but he's off the bench. He comes off the bench for them, and he's always going to be difficult. Danny Collins has been around a long time, hasn't he? The defender knows what it's all about. Reece Hall Johnson, I always quite like the look at him when we've been playing the Idris Khan, who's having a good season alongside Kabamba as well, and Harry Pritchard, midfielder, I think's a terrific player as well. But they've got a lad called Callum Stead, who seems to have come from nowhere. He's had four starts, scored five goals. He's come off the bench a few times, but he was signed in the summer from Kettering. Yeah. And he looks as though he's their wild card.
So they've got a bit of something about them. Is that James Berry then? Is that that particular?
Yes. I think that's a very good link.
So yeah, it's going to be a tough game, but brilliant. Get the first opportunity, get a packed house here. Let's see how Chesterfield, because the last two times they've come to this ground, they've certainly put on a show as well, haven't they? Because it was it 4-2, and the other was quite a close game the other year. So always been a tough battle, apart from the 6-1 or 6-0 or something.
When Kabby got a hat trick.
When Quasi got quite a few, didn't he, that night? So in front of nobody.
Was it Quasi got that trick?
COVID times.
Yeah, it was an empty ground. Scott Loach in goal.
Scott Loach in goal for Barnet,
wasn't it, that time? But, you know, you mentioned about pack houses there, Paul. Does the. I know we talked about this last time, but the crowds this season just beggar belief, don't they?
It's insane. I think you're in for one of these Facebook groups where they put up old pictures of games and reports. John Taylor does a few and whatever. He'll post something on about a game 30 years ago, and you'll look back and you think, there's nobody there. and you'll read through the piece and it'll say crowd was 2,271. You think, what? And we're getting 8,000 plus here now. Yeah. It's absolutely mad.
And we're two divisions below.
Yeah.
Got, you know.
Well, yeah. On the occasion I talked to Paul Cook, and he mentions the crowd, we still all think, yeah, we're getting more than we got in the playoff game against Preston.
Yes.
Mm.
Yeah. You know, to go into the championship. Yeah. And just that one little thing. I mean, the crowd for that Preston game was 8,400. And, of course, there were, like, thick under 2,000 from Preston. So we got just over 6,000. Our average home fans in the eight games so far this season, eight league games, home fans is 6,915. Mm. Just home fans. All fans, it's 7,380. But, you know, crikey it is.
And I think the move to have town fans on four sides of the ground has been a really positive thing.
Which, of course, won't be the case against
No. But as a general rule, I think he's worked well. And the thing that amazes me is the midweek games against whoever, historically, the gates drop off quite a lot. Mm. You know, this Champions League on the telly and this and that, and they can, you know, kids are at school and blah, blah, blah. And we're still getting six and six and a half and nearly 7,000 against teams who are bringing one man and a dog.
Yeah.
I mean, it's quite amazing.
I think we've recorded our two highest Tuesday night attendances at this stadium this season.
Yeah. And it will be interesting to see how Barnet respond when this place is, as I suspect it will be, pretty much packed to the rafters for that game.
By the way, if we had nobody else through the turnstiles for the rest of this season, our average crowd would end up at over 2,500. If nobody else came through, which is more than most will get for the season, most of our opposition will get.
I do think it's obviously it's the legacy of the Trust taking over, the bounce back after COVID, the Cook effect. It's the quality football we're playing. And it's just a nice place to visit.
Yeah.
You know, great to see, I know we talk about this a lot on here, but great to see so many kids and women at the game. It's just tremendous.
I know this is persona non grata as well, but you've got to look back to James Rowe bringing their side that was looking...
Yeah.
You know, that they played some good football. You know, let's not beat around the bush there. His team did play some good football. Winning football, correct, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, in a style that he wanted, which was different to this one, you know, but it brought results, and that gets people coming back, and there was all the feel-good factor then, and topped up by Paul Cook coming back even more, and brilliant. And the club is moving in the right direction, which will link us quite nicely to the training ground, won't it?
Yeah. Yes, it would. I would never use the phrase beating about the bush talking about James Rowe, to be fair. But the training ground, where there are quite a few bushes around there. But, you know, it's made a massive difference to what Paul Cook and Co are able to do.
Shall we go back to Barnet? I was just going to say, we're talking about haircuts instead of bushes. I think it will be a really good test for them. I've watched one or two of their games, and they're coughing over the line. They're really struggling when teams play the low block and stuff against them. They found a way in most games. The game away at Dorking, they were 2-0 down in 20 minutes and getting a football lesson. Absolutely. And Dorking missed a sitter early on in the second half. And that seemed to lift Barnet as well as to say, we've got half a chance of getting back in the game. And they did. But then they were hanging on for grim death again once they'd gone 3-2 up. So I think there's a little bit of smoke and mirrors with them. I don't think they'll have come up against anybody quite like us.
No. I don't think there is anybody quite like us.
No. And I look at it this way. If we're two ahead, beat them with five ahead, win the game in hand, we're eight ahead. You get eight ahead, and then the pressure's really on them to win week in, week out. So I think it's critical. I think we'll put them to the sword. I really do. I think we might send them away with fairly comprehensive good hiding, and I think that'll put a marker down for the rest of the season.
Yes.
I'm not going to disagree with anything that you said there at all, Naz. But then, you know, does it get tougher? Southend away,
come on, are they the best team in the division or not under the circumstances? If there was a
gotta be the manager, you know, of the season.
Really? Gotta be the performance of the season. He plucks an 18-year-old from flipping Charlton, Charlton's U team, and he scores 4 in his debut.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it's incredible. Is there anybody doing better than Southend pound for pound this season, Stu? I don't think there is.
After all their fans have been through, it's like they're getting their luck kind of on the pitch, isn't it?
I'm going to say one thing, that they're going to make
all
the playoffs.
All the bad karma that they get on the terraces. I can see that.
I think the two teams will go up this season, but Chesterfield and Southend.
The only thing that might stop that, I don't know, I've just got a feeling if they suddenly get this takeover and the stability sorted out and all the embargoes are lifted and they find a few bob down the sofa and they go out and start recruiting players, what's that going to do to the team spirit that man's built up?
Yeah.
You know, they've got to be so careful.
They've got to be so careful that he's not actually, first and foremost, that bloke is not a Roman. We don't know anything about him.
I mean, all you can say is that he ain't the bloke they've got at the moment.
Exactly.
That worked out very well for Scunthorpe.
And he's the only Australian I know who's never been in Neighbours.
There is that. I agree, though, that Kevin May is somewhat of a legend down there, and he's just emphasised his status even more, hasn't he? I mean, he's absolutely remarkable. They'll do far better than even Oldham will, who, to me, look like they're just
they'd be in fifth place without the 10-point deduction.
There we go. Yeah.
And they've not had any players. They've not even done anything, have they?
So
Gillingham, I don't know if they appointed Gillingham at anybody, if they come knocking on Southend's door and say...
Well, that's a rumour. The mayor is the one that's been top of the list.
It should be top of nearly everybody's list at the moment. Anybody with own money, it should be top of their list.
Yeah.
No question about that. What a fantastic job that he's done. Their home record, and say we're there away on the 18th of November, their home record is played 9-1-7.
Yeah.
They've lost two, but they've won seven.
Mm.
And, it's a equal sort of 2-4-3 away record, but their home goals scored 23, conceded 6. You know, Southend away is the hardest fixture on the calendar at the moment.
Mm.
I think so. It could be the one that's one too far for Chesterfield, especially if you beat Barnet, you can take a sharp intake of breath. And then you go to Southend and all of a sudden perhaps underestimate them a little bit.
Yeah.
But, I'm in awe with what Mayor's done there with the resources he's had to have. And, of course, as we always used to say in the old days, you know, keep a settled side together and they become a team. Mm. Well, he's had to do that.
Yes. Yeah.
He's had no choice.
Yeah.
Because he's not had enough players.
Use point's a good one though. If everything goes through and suddenly the shackles are off, how will it affect the mentality? Because it's this siege mentality.
It's been a fantastic season.
Will it affect them to the point where they lose focus or noses get put out of joint, etc.? It's going to be an interesting dynamic, isn't it, over the next few weeks?
With the chief executive of a football club tried to get in the room. Was it locked?
Yeah.
Could he not get in? He's sitting outside in the stand. Oh dear me!
Well, there's no key on the inside, and I can't see a way of opening it. So.
No. Yeah, unless he's just pulled and pushed instead of pushed and pulled. I'm not quite sure, but you look at Southend and it's all about the sum. Harry Card was having a great season. The guy who used to be at Chorley and was allegedly linked with Chesterfield a couple of years ago. But then you've got players, you know, he's an ever-present.
Started all 18 games. Jack Bridge has started all 18. Noor Hussain started all 18. Ollie Kensdale started all 18. Then you've got Scott Morris and Harry Taylor who started 16. And Cavan Miley used to be at Eastleigh, the Channel Islander. He started 15, so it's very, very settled.
But as you say, he hasn't... You can't judge him as a manager on his team selections, can you? Because, you know... Her Majesty's Revenue and Customs and pick that team, you know. he's picked the same 14 or 15 players because that's all he's got.
Yes.
So Jeremy Woods
is the pseudo manager himself.
Perhaps Jeremy should be going after him.
Yeah, absolutely right. And then you know the last two games of this month, Woking away and Eastleigh at home. Woking Paul underachievers this season. That they were one of my certs for the playoffs.
Yeah, absolutely. I don't quite know what's going off there with Darren Saul. They've struggled a lot, haven't they? That player that was in seems to be injured against Chesterfield. Is it Reece Grego Cox, the striker? Can't seem to keep him fit. I mean, Manny Oyelecki's went there. He's played in, I think, about 20 minutes or something like that, and they've never seen them again, haven't they? So, I mean, but they actually got to ask special permission from the board to sign him. So Darren Saul pleaded with the board to get him. Yeah, I don't know what.
Cracking.
So what happened there? So that's not panned out very well, is it? But who knew Manny Oyelecki would be injured? So bless him.
But
I mean, he is a good player, but he's no good to anybody if he's sat in the stand week in, week out, is he? So, but yeah, they're struggling, aren't they? They've not got a consistent run of form together. Going, and you know, they lost James Daly, didn't they, in the summer? Big blow for them. He was a good player up here, wasn't he? And they just not really seem to get it together. Lofthouse is another player that left to go to Barnsley. He's been loaned out since from Barnsley as well. So Barnsley just hoovering up all the top talent, even though Lofthouse didn't have a particularly great
Andrew
season.
Dallas.
Well, Andrew Dallas. Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. So, you know, and, you know, then farming him out elsewhere, which is something to look for, isn't it? But, yeah, I'm surprised.
I think another 2 minutes for Kilmarnock last week.
And yeah. He might register 90 by the time.
I think he's added up to about 90.
It's about 90, right, yeah.
It's a different CC setting.
Yeah, but you can never write off a Darren Saul team, though. You know, they are working, like, and it wouldn't surprise me with all the sort of struggles that they had. They perhaps beat us down there on the Tuesday night. So you never know.
But it's at home. Their home form is 2-2-5.
I get the impression,
watching them a time or two, and again, they've been on TV quite a lot. Obviously, as one of the predicted leading lights after last season. Is that they're not playing anywhere near the intensity they played with last season. Nowhere near. I mean, the first half they produced here last season was the best half I've seen any team produce against us. We didn't have time to breathe.
No, absolutely.
The press is all over the pitch. And I'm wondering whether that high-progressive, high-pressing style you can only do for so long. And other than that, football-wise, I think they are fairly limited.
And of course they turned full pro a couple of years ago, so that's starting to be the norm now, and sometimes with part time players you do get a different dynamic, don't you?
Yeah, so I think he must actually be under a bit of pressure. So
if he's not, it's a certain,
he was brought in, wasn't he, from Yeovil? He was. There was a plan in place. It looked as though they'd given him the wherewithal last year to attack it, and they made a really good job of it. But then they've gone again in the summer with him, and it's blowing up fairly spectacularly at the minute. So.
And Eastleigh at home, and they're locked together on they've got one more point than Woking. Eastleigh in the 11th place, Woking in 12th. But they started off badly and have started with a change of manager to get together with. But McCallum started scoring, hasn't he?
Yeah. But their form's a bit all over the place, isn't it? And I mean, they've got Scott Quigley, who's obviously a good striker at this level, but he's no spring chicken now.
And neither got two is McCallum.
Yeah, yeah.
He's not even the best Quigley,
then. No, well,
they win or lose. Last eight, 1-4, lost 4.
Yeah, yeah. So you're not going to make a lot of progress doing that, are you, up the table? So,
but occasionally they score a few, and occasionally they concede a few. They lost 6-0 at home to Gateshead, and they beat Ebbsfleet 5-2 at home. Yeah. So, you know, they're
funny.
You're
funny
not sure what's going to turn up.
I mean, they let Charlie Carter go somewhere recently, didn't they?
Dorking,
that's right. Yeah,
he got injured after his first training session.
Oh, did he?
Broke his hand, I think. Oh, or something.
Oh,
so.
I like Charlie. Yeah. And you know, so. It's a big month. Barnet, Southend, Woking, Eastleigh as the rest of November. Yeah, if you come out with two wins and two draws in that, it'll be all right, won't it? And would you rather have three wins and one defeat? And you can't choose who the defeat's against.
What's that? 9 points as opposed to 8 points.
Yeah,
yeah. I'd sooner have
I'd rather have 8 points than nine.
Oh yeah, yeah, yeah. Well, it's good. Yeah, you know, with one
you're not extra, losing.
Yeah. One's one more point, isn't it? But the other one's undefeated run continues.
Yeah,
you know.
Yeah,
especially if Phil isn't giving you the choice of who you lose to.
yeah, you got to throw that in.
But
I think we're most likely to lose to Southend in that four. If we're going to lose one, it'll be Southend. So there you go.
I trust in Paul Cook. You know, I've learned to trust in Paul Cook unequivocally, you know, undemandingly. You know, I trust in our processes and our methods and our preparation.
So do I.
And all of that, you know.
So do I. But just Southend are just having a weird special season, aren't they, really, in one way or another. And I was remembering the 10-11 season when Sheridan was here. We went down to Southend and he had the worst team picked ever, no strikers in it. We went there and had the easiest 3-2 win you ever have. It was 3-1 till the last minute or something. And that was the game that Dean Smalley came into his own. Whittaker and Smalley were absolutely unbelievable. But when we saw the team, there's no strikers in it. What's going to happen here? And when we say Whittaker and Smalley were absolutely out of this world that day, and it was like, where's this come from then? And everybody from Chesterfield was like, well, none of us saw that coming. But
they were in a cracking run of form when we went down there last season and beat them to the point where Jack Bridge actually got taken off because Shackleford had marked him out of the game, and he was you know, supposedly their danger man that night, and Colclough I think scored a belter, didn't he? Maguire scored a header, and it was a competent performance. They can't have improved much since then, can they?
Well, we've certainly not brought the players in to improve apart from the left from Charlton.
I mean, people will look at our run and say, oh, it won't go on forever, you know. But then why can't the same apply to Southend?
Yeah. You know, Man City go on forever, don't they?
Yeah, someone's going to have to go down there and beat them.
Portsmouth have proven you can do
quite a long run, isn't it? Yeah. March, isn't it, since they lost?
Yeah. So they're due, aren't they?
Yeah. Absolutely, yeah.
Yeah, no question about that. Yeah, that 2-1 win at Southend last season. They'd lost at home to Barnet a few days before, but they'd had a lot of wins in the previous 10 games before that. So, we always ask, are they going to continue it? Daryl always says yes. But all of a sudden, 10 consecutive wins seems more feasible than your normal time.
Yeah, well, I think we're going to lose the next time.
we briefly mentioned before, we probably put a slight edit into the podcast about the training ground, Paul. And, there's some great clips coming on the club's YouTube channel from there. And you can see, how good the surfaces are of the two pitches, B, how good the camaraderie is as well.
Yeah, it's about time, isn't it, that they had some sort of decent setup as well. You know, for professional football club after all these years, it's not like Highfield Park, is it, like so many years ago. So Sean Dyche was, there as boss. But they don't have to train at Warminster Road anymore. They spent a lot of money on it, haven't they? And it's been a sort of baby of Ashley Kirk and Phil Kirk to sort out straight away, isn't it? And it's not finished yet, is it? That's just the start. That's just the first phase of it, isn't it? So just to get the pitches sorted as plans possibly to build some sort of building there where they can get changed. You know, that's a nice novelty, isn't it? So, you know, rather than coming down to the ground to do it, and maybe even some sort of like cafe facility where they can have some food before they go out to do the training, and maybe even maybe in a press room or something like that. I don't know. One may hope, I'm impressed with it, and it looks pretty good. And I know it's not the ideal site that they wanted initially, but looking at what they've got now, it looks tip top, doesn't it? And that's the way to bring in players of an ilk, like Tom Naylor, like Will Grigg. Obviously, their wages will help, but you've got to be professional. And the training ground is where they spend all their donkey work, isn't it? Mm. So that's the day-to-day job there. The playing on a Saturday is the benefit for working hard during the rest of the week. So the training ground should be in better position than anything at all.
The irony with that comment, Paul, is, of course, the last few years when we've not had a training ground, we've had a lot of donkeys playing for us. But and you know, the crowdfunding stalled a little bit, but there's sort of $4,000 last time I looked in there for equipment that shows people are willing to chuck in the hard earned even in difficult times, Stu. And you know, that togetherness, we touched on it with the crowds when we were talking about the crowds earlier on, but it's I don't remember it being like this in all of my time.
No, it's oh, hang on, that's my phone. Yeah. Hang on, sorry, go away. Go away, clear off.
Technology.
Where's a 7-year-old when you need him, eh?
Yeah. Right.
Training ground. Yeah.
Yeah. Training ground. Togetherness. Yeah. It.
I think that was ring fence money.
It is unusual. Well, for us, it is unusual, isn't it? You know, you remember it's poisonous atmospheres almost sometimes. You know, people reminisce about how great it was at Saltergate in the night matches and all of that stuff. But, you know, when you were stuck at the back of the cop and no one could see you, you could say what you like or who you like, couldn't you? And it's not always necessarily the best kind of atmosphere for an individual to flourish. And now there is this great unity of purpose almost between fans and players and all the staff and everybody on the back room and just everybody who walks the corridors in the East Stand where we're doing this from at the minute. Everybody is pointing in the same direction, you know, and they're all kind of almost arms around each other's shoulders walking there together, you know, like one of these foreign teams that have their great sort of marches to the game or something like that. We've got that kind of spirit among all of us. Yeah. You know, and everybody understands, I think, that they have a job to do in it, you know, and mine is to trust in Cook and trust in the process and trust in the players and not to be abusive if I can avoid it when it doesn't go well, you know, whatever that feels like, I've forgotten. And, you know, to be supportive as best as I possibly can at all times. I don't necessarily believe in unconditional support because you've got to get something back for it, you know. But I think that what we can offer between now and the end of the season it is not unconditional support but deserved support.
But the community element, I'm not talking about the football in the community, but the togetherness of it. It feels to me, Paul, just the same as when the Cowley brothers were at Lincoln and they were in non-league, and of course they had that terrific season. They did really well in the cup, played at Arsenal, didn't they? And came back into the Football League, massive crowds, strongest the club had been for years, wasn't it?
Yeah, it is. I remember going to Lincoln many years ago, and the crowds are very similar to what Chester were getting, around sort of 3,000 to 3,500, and that's a city compared to a town, isn't it? So, you know, the momentum.
A city with no competition for miles around.
Absolutely, yeah. So you see that, don't you? You see the sort of wave of enthusiasm coming from this town, and it is the best. it's the most populated thing to do in Chesterfield is to come to a match every 2 weeks, isn't it? Nowhere else in this town, or even in the sort of borough, gets as many people coming to this ground here that is the biggest activity anybody could possibly come to, you know, and the club are taking advantage of that. I'd like to see more. I'd like to see billboards. I'd like to see, you know, buses going around with, you know, come to the ground and whatnot, you know, going around the town, and that more in the town centre that makes it the only focal point of the town is coming to Chesterfield Football Club. It lives and breathes it. You see it in Newcastle. I was fortunate to live there for 8 years, and even when they were rubbish, they were absolutely rubbish. Everybody talked about Newcastle. Everybody, you know. So even if they didn't like football, it was just about Newcastle. You go into the match, you know. That was it. It was exposed, and I'd like to see that here. I'd love to see that here.
Yeah, and who was it? Who was the associate with Newcastle that sort of said the 1-2-3 order for a Newcastle supporter is club, wife, job, or something like that? I can't remember who it was. It might have been someone like Souness
or something like that.
Yeah, I don't think it was John Hall, but money.
Sergio.
Yeah, Sergio, that'd be money. Is there anything else?
Yeah.
But it is a special place at the moment, and it shouldn't be because we're in non-league. But it is.
No, but it is the wider effect. And you think of John Crew, Andy,
Mike Goodwin, all the trust, everybody who was involved in digging the club out from under Dave Allen. You know, we were on a knife, let's be fair. If that hadn't have gone through, I should have to think, would there have been a football club?
I'm sure that suffering relegation to the National League and you know, being in such a dreadful state as we were, run by the people that we were, has set up the circumstances for how we are now.
Exactly. You know, combined with COVID as well, yeah, people really miss it.
Yes, exactly. You know, that created a sort of a petri dish, if you like, for this current enthusiasm to grow in.
Yeah,
you know, fully agree. And the trust have seeded that.
Yeah,
certainly.
I think the community see all the good work that
I wonder, you know, if we'd never got relegated from League One, you know, after Cookie left, if we'd have just bumbled around in 18th or 19th or something for 5-10 seasons, would we have the same sort of unity and feeling about the place now? Probably not.
You know, I think that's why Phil and Ashley Kirk have come in and know how important the community trust is in being the custodian of the football club.
Yeah.
And being at the, you know, we're in the hub. It is the hub of the town. And what Paul says is right. Nowhere else do you get 7,000-8,000 local people together every fortnight than here.
Mm. And tomorrow we're running a couple of tours, which were the first tours that we paid for. Yeah. Tours of five, because we did a little trial a few weeks ago, a few weeks ago, and it was free, and there were a few no shows, and it was, nevertheless, it was still great. And, you know, in the daytime, I was just sitting, being involved with the tours, but waiting for people to come. And just seeing the people that come through the hub, you know, in a day. That are nothing to do with 11 against 11 on a Saturday afternoon. It's all under the auspices of.
Yeah.
But there were older people's clubs, younger people's clubs, educational elements, exercise classes, kids in Chesters. Yeah. And it was just non-stop. Yeah. And you know, we can hear something in the background now going off. That's obviously some sort of physical activity going off. I don't know what it is. But it's just unbelievable to see all of that. And so people come here who might not go to the match, but they come here for a positive experience.
Yeah. Yeah.
And even if they don't go to the football, after a while they might get persuaded to, or they might get a pound ticket type of thing to come. And then they'll come, and some will think, all right, yeah, okay, that's right. But you only need 1 in 20 people who come for the first time to become lifetime season ticket holders, and you've done your job. Yeah,
yeah. It cements in, you know, in the minds of the people that use the club like that, it cements in their minds the idea that the football club is an asset for the town. You know, and even if they don't ever kind of shell out 20 quid to come and sit and watch Pompey on Sunday or whatever, they still hold the club to be an asset, and they speak well of the club, you know, and they tell their friends about it and all of that, and the club just becomes so important to the town in that respect that the town can't do anything other than help it prosper.
Yeah, yeah. Great. And that's apart from our normal go around the table if anyone wants to say. Well, my bit that I want to say is we're just starting up, and Stuart's involved as well, a new heritage group. And you know, when you've got people like Phil Kirk and Ash Kirk on the menu who get it, on the board, they get it. People like John Crute and Andy Phantom have always got it, but sometimes you've got a little bit more support than that. So I'm looking forward to getting involved with trying to really push that in a significant way, the likes of which has not never been pushed before, because there's only a certain amount that we as volunteers can do without the support of the club.
Yeah.
And for the first time, it feels as though there's that support of the club on the heritage side, Stu.
Yeah, it does, doesn't it? Yeah.
Mm. And Stuart's just managed to acquire some new slides, colour photographs from 73, was it?
Of, 73 full season, I think.
So with a very youthful looking Andy Kowalski and various. So I suspect they'll be the only colour photographs of several players, Chesterfield players, that we've got.
Yes, well, that was the attraction of them to me, really, mainly. Was that. We've got head and shoulders portraits of everyone who's on it, but colour ones, no.
No, are these going to go anywhere, or are they going to be?
Well, it's not the kind of thing you can kind of walk around the crowd with one of them little.
No, no, no. Are they going on the site? The,
Possibly. Yeah, yeah.
Okay.
We'll find a use for them. We're looking at. We're looking at. Are there any pockets of money around for bids and everything that you can help to, whether it's display memorabilia or just really bring together visual or audio elements of
you've got to be able to display it somehow.
Yes,
you know?
Yes.
Because then you persuade people that you are an organisation that is capable of looking after it properly, conserving it properly.
I mean,
you're not
going to
take it and put it in your garage, you know, no names, no pack drill, and you're not, you know, and when people, unfortunately, you know, pass away or whatever, I want people to think, what should we do with Dad's old stuff? Let's give it to the football club.
And the wonderful thing about the technology in this day and age,
I want us to be trusted like,
you can show digitally. You don't physically have to have, we all like to see physical stuff, but you know, from a photograph point of view, well, what's better than a telly on a screen that if your favourite player was Ken Tyler, you can press a, you can put Ken Tyler in and it'll bring up 30 photographs of Ken Tyler.
Yeah.
You know, whatever it might be, you can do that.
Yeah.
You can't show 30 photographs of every player that's ever played for Chesterfield because there isn't the space.
No.
But you can digitise it and start moving that forward. So that's a really exciting feature that we're right at the ground floor. We had a first meeting a few days ago.
Speaking of the site as well, the site's moved, hasn't it? The cfchistory.com.
Yes.
It's a bit of a long-winded one to repeat, isn't it?
It but is, yes.
I'll put the link up on here on the pod as well. So
thank you.
I'll link it to
perhaps
it.
I don't know. If I log
on,
I can just read.
Google.com. /view/cfhistory /home because I put it on my site.
It's a bit of a mouthful.
I think if you search CFC History at home, and if you're on Twitter X, you can just find CFC History and the link's on there.
The link is on this pod, the homepage of the X anyway.
CFCHistory.com has unfortunately been taken down by the people who put it up in the first place. But I still own the domain and I'd like to link that to the new website. But I am unfortunately, my grasp of computer technical issues.
Yeah, we got that with your phone earlier on, Steve.
Yeah, it sort of ceased when they invented Windows 3.11.
This is the man who's put the most comprehensive history database of any football club anywhere in the world together and he can't answer his phone.
Well, that just goes to show how easy Google is to use.
Yeah,
you know?
That's a good
really,
point.
I'd recommend it to anyone.
Paul, your turn.
Yeah, I don't even know where we can think. You've got a meeting, haven't you, on Thursday?
Have I?
You're for Fans Forum, haven't you? Another Fans Forum?
Oh, yeah, Fans Forum on Thursday night, 7 o'clock.
Okay.
Yeah, and if you can't get, we'll hopefully have a link that you can hear us this time. But forum at chesterfield-fc.co.uk for any questions. So that's 7 o'clock on the 2nd, it'll be, won't it, on Thursday? Here in the hub.
Enjoy the ride.
Yeah.
All I would say to all supporters at the minute, like I keep saying to my pals in the East End, be patient because we will get on top and we will wear teams down. You know, let's not let anxious people in the stand start transmitting to the pitch.
Yes.
There's no reason to suspect if we don't all keep our nerve, it will work out. So enjoy the ride because we're playing some great stuff, scoring loads of goals. And if we all keep together, I'm sure we'll get where we want to be.
Absolutely.
Well, thank you very much. That's been The Sky Is Blue. I've been Phil Tooley with Stuart Basson, Paul Fisher and Daryl Carpenter. And, well, we'll be back next time. Paul says, come on, let's all sit around in a table. Thank you.
And if you like this podcast, then don't forget to subscribe. Please rate and review us on Spotify, Apple and Google Podcasts and many of your favourite podcast providers.